Who is the Martian Emperor? When a giant airship descends on New York City in 1892 and threatens destruction if the world does not submit to the Martian flag, it's up to the mysterious Smith, inventor and adventurer, to find out what forces are at work. To stop the menace, they'll need to enlist the help of Theodore Roosevelt and other early 20th century heroes. It's the second book in Andrew Mayne's The Chronological Man series, and the Martian Emperor combines mystery, airship battles, and backroom Tammany Hall politics, all against the backdrop of a world on the verge of war. You can buy it for only $1 at Amazon or Nook, coming soon to Apple iBooks. It's Andrew Mayne's The Chronological Man, The Martian Emperor, available now on ebook. This is a free audiobook presentation of The Chronological Man, The Monster in the Mist by Andrew Mayne, read by Justin Robert Young. If you would like to download the full ebook for only 99 cents, head on over to Amazon or Barnes & Noble's Nook Store or Apple's iBooks. If you are enjoying this presentation, head on over to the Amazon listing for The Chronological Man, The Monster in the Mist, and remember to leave a review. We appreciate it. Chapter 20. Smith found more parts to animals from the charnel house, but nothing that looked human. He began to wonder if he ever would. Most of what men knew the creatures was myth. The one he was after had no scientific name. It came from parts where men very rarely went. Although Broderick said its mate had the form of a squid, it could have been a different animal altogether. They know so little about it, let alone how its digestive system worked. Maybe it chewed up men whole and shat out powdered bones. The tunnel opened up to a large cistern. Smith hesitantly stuck a foot forward. There was another drop. One more foot, and the water would be near his shoulder. Another, and he'd be underwater, with no way to breathe. He walked to the far end of the tunnel to see if there was some kind of ledge that ringed the cistern. Smith put a gloved hand on the wall and stuck his foot forward. He leaned in, but could only feel the slosh of water through his boots. A wave pushed up against his back, and he slipped on the muck. His foot hit the ground, and he regained his balance. The water was 8 inches higher, stopping at his armpits. He looked up and around the cistern with his helmet lamps. It was 50 feet across and 20 feet to the ceiling. He was trying to place it in his mental map when he had a realization. He was deep underground, in a man-made sewer. There shouldn't be any waves. His stomach tightened like a fist as he realized something had pushed him into the cistern. The water was deeper here. The thing could conceal its entire bulk and never be seen coming. Smith pushed his back against the wall and looked around the chamber. There was the usual debris he'd come to expect. Newspapers, bottles, a few planks, and tree branches. He looked to his left and to his right to see if there was anything he could shield his body with. Despite the armor, he felt so naked and open. If he got pulled under, there was no way he could survive. The weight of it would pull him to the bottom. Taking it off would leave him defenseless. He was such a stupid man, he told himself. He'd come to believe the stories others had whispered about him. Smith had deluded himself that maybe he was the supernatural creature Lindstrom suspected. Foolish. If only they knew that his survival was in part because of his absolute avoidance of things that could cause him harm. The water looked black as ink in the red light of his helmet. Smith scanned the surface, looking for any trace of the creature. Garbage and flotsam made tiny ripples in the water. He looked at the waterline and noticed for the first time that the whole chamber was acting like a wine glass as the wine gently rocked back and forth. Only it wasn't a clumsy hand giving inertia to the wine in the glass. It was the movement of something very large under the water, making it rock back and forth. It was swimming in circles. Was this how it hunted? Circling in front of its prey. Would it circle around him if his back weren't to the wall? How would the attack happen? Would it slip a tentacle around his ankles and pull him under? It was a powerful beast. Miss L. Mallory said it lifted Carnegie into the air. Its tentacles had to be at least 30 feet long to reach up through the gutter and pull a man down. Smith stared at the center of the cistern. He did the math in his head. 30-foot tentacles, plus another 10 for the body, and it was at least 40 feet long. If the cistern was 50 feet across, that meant it was little over 150 feet in circumference. The animal took up almost a third of it as it went around. Smith had no idea how any of that was immediately useful to him, but it gave him some idea of where it was as he watched the waterline trace a wave around the chamber. He could tell when the bulk of the body was in front of him. He looked over at the tunnel he had just come through. If he timed it right, he could wait for the creature to pass and then climb back in there and make a run for it. He traveled a little bit faster with a slightly lower water level. Would it be fast enough? The creature had showed it was quite adept at navigating the sewers. It may have preferred the depth of the cistern, but it certainly didn't need it. Was it going to pursue him if he made a retreat? Smith had no way of knowing the mind of the creature. He hadn't even seen it yet. But he knew it was out there. Was it waiting for him to make a move? In its eyes, whatever they could see from beneath the water, he looked like a different animal than the ones he was pulling from the surface to consume. His metal exterior, his large, glowing red eyes, set him apart. The glowing eyes. Smith wondered if the creature thought he was some other species of squid, an ocean predator, like itself. He was sure that illusion would be shattered when it observed him clumsily stumbling in the water. Smith was no sea creature. There was also the scientific fact that being another squid would exclude Smith from the animal's eating list. Smith felt the strange surge of water gently pass him by. How long would he let this go on? Presently, he was waiting for the squid to make the first move. Perhaps the squid had the same inclination. Smith could hope that it lost interest and swam away. But waiting for that to happen also meant waiting for it to strike first. He thought of the story Broderick had told about how outfoxed them and picked the men off, one by one, as it touched the harpoon gun. That was an incredibly adaptive thinker. Maybe it had seen whalers before, but that kind of planning, organized planning, with a mate, was hard to comprehend. If Smith tried to exit, that meant turning his back on it. That could be deadly. He felt the surge again. This time it seemed more powerful. Smith could feel pressure from the water getting closer. It was widening its range. Soon it would brush up against him. Smith knew he had to act. The creature was getting more aggressive. No matter how confused or entranced it may have been with his bright red eyes, it was going to make a move soon. Smith recalled that sailors sometimes said sharks would bump up against men in the water before they struck. Was this common to other sea creatures? Smith remembered something about whales doing it too. If he waited for contact, that would solve the nagging problem in the back of his mind, how to deal with the range of his Gatling underwater. The bullets would only travel a few feet before they lost their velocity. After that, they just plummet to the bottom. If it got close enough... Smith put both hands on the Gatling and pushed his buttocks against the wall while leaning forward, aiming the gun to angle into the water. His fingers were ready on the trigger. He felt the stronger push and almost pulled the trigger before he realized it was just a bigger wave. What would he do after he fired? He might hit the body, but the business end of the squid was in its powerful tentacles, and those were what were moving past him. He still had his powered gloves and a little electric power left. That might be enough to discourage a tentacle, but no more than a flea on a dog. Smith had timed out the waves and was ready for the next one, but it didn't come. He felt a moment of relief before the recognition sank in. it was creating the expectation of a pattern in him. On instinct, Smith jerked to his right and aimed the gun into the water. Something crashed into his chest. He squeezed the trigger and sent 20 rounds into whatever just hit him. The gun made a loud racket as it sent a spray of bullets into the bulk in front of him. He felt something twitch and violently thrash. There was a sucking sound as it changed direction and shot away from him, creating a small vortex in the water. It wasn't expecting that kind of reaction. Bullets were an alien thing in his world. Smith turned to the opening and waded toward it. He moved inches at a time, while the thing could go yards in the same span. He stepped up into the tunnel and ran as fast as the suit would allow him. He heard the echo of splashing water in the cistern as the angry animal thrashed around looking for him. Smith kept moving. He didn't turn around. He had to reach a ladder. The pile of rotten animal flesh passed on his right. He paused as he heard a splash at the mouth of the tunnel he was in. He looked back and saw a surge of water. For the very first time, he saw the glowing orange eyes. They were racing toward him. He couldn't make it to the next junction in time. Smith threw himself on top of the dead flesh and climbed up on it. His feet skidded and slid as it tried to find purchase. He strained and shaved as he got his chest and then his legs and his waist on top of it. He pulled his legs up as the glowing eyes came near. Smith thought of his own eyes. He resisted the urge to throw the helmet away when he couldn't get the switch to work. His nervous fingers finally found it and dimmed them. Smith stood up on the island of dead animal parts, pulling his body as far away from the orange eyes as they passed. He watched as they glided into the junction he'd been heading into. And then they stopped. Smith could imagine the creature was trying to figure out which way he had gone. By now, the green fire had died away. There were three other directions. By what senses was it trying to determine this? Smith could only guess. Was it using its tentacles to feel for vibrations in the water? Smith waited for it to choose a direction, then glide away. But the eyes just stayed there, faintly glowing under the water. It was confused. It knew something wasn't right. It suspected it had been tricked. Smith looked up from the drainpipe that was spilling blood and bile onto him. He reached a gloved hand to the lip and grabbed hold. He might be able to pull his body up, but not with the armor. He looked down at the pile of bones. If he crawled into the abattoir's drainpipe, he might find an exit. There was probably a removable grating covering a trough that led to the pipe. He looked back toward the junctions. The eyes were gone. Did they always glow? Was that another trick? Smith waited in the dark. He listened for the trickle of water as it splashed over his suit and onto the refuse pile he was standing on. He tried to listen for waves, but heard none. Smith began to strip off his armor. Chapter 21. Smith unhooked the helmet and set it into the drainpipe above his head. He faced the eyes downward, so their dim glow could provide some light, but not enough to attract his attention. He hoped, knowing full well that he hadn't a clue what the squid could see. He took off his boots and set them on the pile next to his bare feet. The rotten flesh squished between his toes. He pulled off the leggings and used them to stand on. Lastly, he slid the chest plate over his head. The gloves were attached via thick cables and came off like a child's jumper. He was soaked to the skin in his boxers, and his shirt were wet with sweat and water. Blood and bile dripped on him, adding to the fluid staining him. He tried to push the chest plate into the drainpipe, but he knew it was too large. He didn't want to abandon it just yet. Even without the mini Gatling attached to it, the batteries, plating, and electrical apparatus made it weigh a considerable amount. He almost fell over trying to get through the small opening. He settled for clipping the fingers of one of the powered gloves to the lip of the pipe. He also made climbing into the pipe easier. Smith reached up and grabbed the pipe with both of his hands. He placed a foot into the neck opening, the chest piece, and climbed up. His other foot pulled away from the pile. He tried not to think of the rotten flesh still clinging to the soles of his feet and squishing between the spaces of his toes. It was only animal flesh. He'd climbed through much worse, he reminded himself. Smith pulled his body into the opening and nudged the helmet out of the way with his forehead. Below him, he heard a small splash as one of the boots fell into the water. Smith scrambled to get his whole body into the pipe. It was a narrow fit. Just enough space for his shoulders. He used his hands to push the helmet further, and then pull himself deep enough to keep his legs from dangling. Once his toes came over the edge, he breathed a silent breath of relief. He turned the helmet to face down the pipe. He adjusted the dimmer and saw what looked like 100 feet of decaying meat and bones trail off into the darkness. The tunnel was at a gradual incline. It wasn't going to be easy work pulling himself through it, but it was manageable enough. He reached his arms forward and pulled himself farther in. He nudged the helmet and pulled himself a few feet more. Bits of bone poked into his chest while he tried to control his breathing, so he wouldn't open his mouth and get any of the filth inside there. Out of the light, he could see tiny little eyes looking back at him. More rats. He welcomed their presence, given the alternative. At the moment, he thought of himself as one giant rat crawling through the pipe to gain entry into the abattoir. He began to think about what he was going to do next. Anything but the filthy, claustrophobic space which lay before him. Once he found the grating that would take him to freedom, he'd have to make it back to one of his safe houses and change into something that didn't make him look like a blood-covered maniac. His mission to find a body was derailed the moment Flintwick and Dobbins shot him off the motorcycle. After everything, he was going to emerge empty-handed. Smith pushed the helmet forward once again and looked into the pipe ahead of him. Where had all the tiny eyes gone? Were they that offended by his presence? He pulled himself forward and then smelled the strong scent of ammonium. He could hear dripping water in the tunnel behind him, water dripping from something besides the pipe he was presently clogging. He could feel cold water fall on the back of his legs. He froze every muscle and tried to will himself to be part of the blood and muck he was face down in. Something slapped the back of his legs. Then he felt a tentacle reach around them and squeeze. It had found him. Smith clawed his fingers into the pipe to stop from being dragged backwards. They ripped free from the seam as the creatures pulled his legs out of the pipe. Smith's hands clung to handfuls of rotting flesh and bone as he tried to hold anything to stop him from being extricated from his hiding place. The creature pulled at his legs again and jerked him halfway out of the pipe. Smith felt the knuckles of the powered glove scrape by his testicles as the creature yanked him free from the small space. In the last instant, Smith grabbed hold of the armor he'd clung to from the pipe. The creature swung him into the middle of the chamber and held him aloft in midair. Two orange eyes looked up at him from the water. That was all he could see in the darkness. Was it confused by Smith being out of his shell? Whatever the reason, Smith used the hesitation to slide the chest plate back over his body and pull the gloves over his hands. He pressed the knob on his chest and powered the wrist pistons. The suit began to hum. Smith punched the broad part of the tentacle, grasping his legs, and sent a ton of force into the area the size of a silver dollar. He could feel blood and fluids shoot out and trickle down his legs. The creature loosened his grasp, and Smith fell into the water. He quickly righted himself and made sure everything was plugged in. Another tentacle lashed out and pinned his arm to his waist. Smith had to wait a moment for the piston to reset. He punched the tentacle and felt another spray of fluid. Smith didn't delude himself into thinking these were anything more than pinpricks to the beast, but it dropped him into the water. The orange eyes looked straight at him. Smith felt two pairs of tentacles whip around his body and pin both of his arms to his sides. Damn, it learned fast. The eyes grew larger as it pulled him toward the beak-like mouth. He could hear the sound of cartilage cracking as it opened wide. Somewhere inside there was a razor-like tongue ready to lick the flesh off his bones. Smith breathed in and let the creature bring him closer. The ammonium smell was so powerful, his sinuses began to burn. He could hear the sound of something flicking around in its beak-like mouth. The creature pulled him forward. Inside his glove, Smith pressed the switch that would power the copper loops and studs that charged his suits. He had only a small charge left. There was a flash of light and a loud crack as the squid got its first taste of electricity. It flung Smith against the wall as it spasmed. Smith hit his head on the concrete, and he passed out. Surprised by the new sensation, the creature wasn't sure what to do. It had never met anything like Smith. Smith's body sank into the water. The crook of his arm landed on a plank and helped keep his mouth barely out of the sewer. He was struggling to regain consciousness when he could hear the faint sound of voices. He opened his eyes and saw two figures on a rowboat, backlit by a lantern. He tried to warn them about the creature, but he was still too dazed to say anything. He blacked out. Hands pulled him out of the water and back into the boat. He looked up and saw Broderick smiling back down at him. He put a finger to his lips and looked at something in the shadows. He brought a harpoon gun to bear and fired. It hit the wall with a clang. "Damn!" Broderick shouted before muffling his voice. Smith raised his head to look over the edge of the boat. He saw the two orange eyes and its serpent-like tentacles. Broderick started rowing away from it. Smith tried to shake his head, but it wouldn't move. It was lodged in a small, soft place. There was a familiar smell, a pleasant one in the air. It made him feel relaxed. "It's gaining on us," said Broderick. "I don't think that's going to do much good." Smith looked up and saw a shower of smoke and sparks fly past his head and illuminate the tunnel. He heard thrashing and the sound of something snapping. There was more splashing and then faded away. "It's running the other way," said Broderick. "Might give us enough time to get to a ladder." A rough hand leaned over and slapped Smith on the face. "Wake up, boy! We gotta run!" Smith lifted his head again, and there it looked where the creature had been. There was a lone tentacle pinned to the wall, like an insect on a specimen tray. "I should," mumbled Smith as he got to his elbows. "Don't be looking at me. Thank Mad Dog Captain April," Broderick replied as he pointed behind Smith. The still-dazed Smith turned and saw April sitting in the back of the rowboat, holding on to the handle of the umbrella. "I think I broke it," she said as she tried to make sense of the knobs. Broderick slapped Smith in the face again. "Okay, okay," said Smith as he sat up. He turned to April. "It's a complete failure. I couldn't find a body." "We'll have three of them now if you don't help me row," snapped the old sailor. "What about that?" asked April as she pointed to the tentacle on the wall. "Oh, of course," shouted Smith before anyone could pull him back into the boat. He splashed into the water and ran to where the creature had ripped away from its own arm. He pulled the smoldering umbrella free, and 5 feet of tentacle splashed into the water. He dragged it back to the boat. Broderick pointed to a ladder. "No more boats!" April went up first. Broderick helped the still-delirious Smith lug the muscular appendage up the ladder as they pulled themselves to the surface. Once he felt the relatively safe cobblestones beneath his body, Smith passed out again. Blood seeped from the deep gouges in his legs, where the creature claws had dug in. Chapter 22. April looked up from his legs, where she and Broderick were bandaging them. She shook her head. Smith smiled weakly. Broderick wiped a bloody hand on his jacket. "Not as bad as the chunk that it pulled out of my leg. I'd get a proper doctor to have a look at that in the morning." The sky was still pitch black. The only illumination in the street was from the lantern April had carried up the ladder. She looked over at the tentacle that lay a few feet away. 5 feet long, as thick as a man's leg, at the widest. It flattened out into a spoon-shaped appendage that had scores of suction cups and claws that stuck out like teeth. To her mind, it looked like something that would give a snake nightmares. She wrinkled her nose at the pungent ammonium smell that it gave off as it oozed dark yellow fluid onto the street. "I don't suppose it'll be coming back for that," she asked. "Not for long," said Broderick. Smith looked him over. Why the change of heart? Broderick nodded at April. Miss Malone convinced me that I should be avenging Mr. Webb and not trying to outrun his ghost. Smith turned his head to her. How did you find me? The boat? April wiped her wet hands on her sleeve. I heard the gunshots and the sound of your contraption crash. I ran out to the street as fast as I could, but only saw green fire, and I knew something had gone wrong, so I went to get Broderick. April took off her hat and ran a finger through her hair. That motorcycle is nothing like the velocipede you had me practice on. I nearly killed myself on it. I think I need more practice. Yes, but how did you get to me so quickly? Said Smith. I've been rowing boats all my life. We had the tide, it took 2 hours, but we kept in the main line, straight line. We'll get hit thrashing from almost the harbor, replied Broderick. 2 hours? Smith turned to look at his chronograph strapped to his wrist. He hadn't realized how long he'd been down there, the creature's plaything. Smith got to his feet. Water dripped from his chest armor and gloves that he was still wearing. Cold wind chilled the parts of his legs where the bandages didn't cover them. He bent over to pick up the thick end of the tentacle. Let me get that for you, said the sailor as he leaned over and threw it over his shoulder. Been hauling sea monsters all my life, he said with a wink. Smith watched as the severed end poured out a stream of vile fluid. Is our man from MIT at the station? I know how to reach him if he's not. Cohen should already be there, April answered. I gave it a shock from my suit. It barely did anything to it, said Smith, shaking his head. April stood up and looked at the remnants of the armor. What about with a full charge? She asked. Smith shook his head. It was too big. My bullets barely penetrated the skin. The suit couldn't hold a large enough charge to do much damage. His eyes turned back to the open manhole cover. I think the harpoon on the other was a lucky shot. I don't know what to do here. Poison? Bombs? I just don't know. But electricity could kill it, she asked. If you have enough of it, replied Smith. More than I have. Smith paused. What are you thinking, Miss Malone? Smith pushed open the front door of the South Boston police station and walked inside. Mr. Cohen, his lawyer, was seated at a desk near the back, talking to a captain with his pointy white beard. They both tuned in to look at the ridiculous man dressed in his armor in the upper torso and underwear. Cohen just shook his head. A short man with refined mannerisms, he knew the firm's mysterious client had a knack for showing up at odd times in unusual predicaments. The captain got up from his desk and walked over to the night desk. Smith, I presume. Smith looked over at Cohen, waiting for his attorney to tell him if it was okay to respond. Cohen nodded. At your service, Captain, Smith said as he looked at the brass nameplate. Captain Brooks. "There's an arrest warrant out for you," said Brooks. Cohen held up a sheet of paper. "That's been rescinded, as I've been explaining to you, Captain." "Not until I speak to the judge," reprimanded Brooks. "This is most illegal, Captain. First you get some flim-flam man of a consultant to convince your senile judge to sign a bogus writ, and now you refuse to rescind it?" Brooks looked at Smith. His eyes lingered over his armor. Are you responsible for the green fire? What happened to Dobbins and Flintwick? Cohen spoke up. That is an entirely separate matter that I assure you my client is not responsible for. He shot a glance at Smith, telling him to keep his mouth shut. We'll sort that mess out. Brooks gave Smith a wary look. I'm told you're our maniac. He noticed bits of blood and flesh that were stuck between the crevices in the armor. Smith looked down. It's not human, I think. I fell into a pile of animal flesh in the sewer below, an abattoir. Mostly pig, I believe. He looked up and saw Cohen shaking his head. Brooks arched an eyebrow. He looked over at April. How do you fit into this mess? She stepped up to the desk. Cohen nodded to her. I'm his assistant, she almost said computer. I saw the thing. The thing that you're after. I promise it's not a man. If you ask Miss O'Mallory, she'll confirm this.
Confirm what? A monster?
Not a monster, said Smith. Not in the bedtime story variety, although this would make a frightful one. It's got a haunted sailing vessel, an avenging ghost, and a very nasty creature. He noticed that Brooks was not amused. Sorry, like Miss Malone said, not a man, not a monster. The doors burst open behind them. They turned to see Broderick's backside as he dragged something into the station. Least you could have had me done was let me catch up a bit, he muttered. Smith ran over to help the man place the bundle on the large desk. Brooks gazed down at the pale, oozing tentacle. He looked to Cohen, then to Smith. It's a form of cephalopod, we think. At least we need a marine biologist to confirm it. If you let Miss Malone use your telephone, she could ring one up, said Smith. Brooks tried to process everything. You mean to say this is what's responsible for the missing persons? It's a foul thing to be sure, but I hardly see how this thing could be responsible. Oh, my captain. This, Smith jabbed a finger into the pale flesh. It suddenly spasmed. The clawed ends whipped past Brooks' face before smashing back on the desk. The startled captain pulled out his service revolver, not sure where to point it. Several other police officers who had gathered behind him did the same. Sorry. Just a reflex, I think, said Smith. As I was saying, this isn't the creature. This is just part of it. It's got several more appendages just as nasty as this one. My companions managed to corner it and pin part of it to the wall. He ran his finger over the charred end where the flames from the umbrella had burned its flesh. The creature cut its losses, as you might say, and left this behind. Maybe it'll grow back another one. Smith glanced at Broderick. He shrugged. Brooks shook his head. This is our maniac? Or rather, this is part of our maniac? The door opened, and a chilling voice called out.
Don't be fooled.
Captain, Mr. Smith is quite a cagey liar. And a dangerous one. Lindstrom walked over to the desk and looked down at the tentacle.
Is this his monster in the sewer?
He turned to Smith.
Couldn't find a dead ape at the monkey house? Resorting to tall tales about giant squids. Find this at the fish market.
Does this look like something that you get at a market? Said Smith.
It's a pickled scientific specimen, probably pilfered from a museum. You can smell the ammonium preservative, scoffed Lindstrom, as he lied through his teeth.
Pickled specimen? Said Smith. He held up his finger. The gathered crowd took a collective step back, except for Lindstrom. Smith jabbed his finger into it again. The appendage thrashed around on the table and then fell flat. Lindstrom stared down at the ooze coming from the open end. He shrugged.
A specimen, nonetheless. And not an uncommon one in some circles. Just a theatrical prop of sorts. Admittedly, of flesh. But proof of nothing.
Lindstrom proudly crossed his arms over his chest.
In fact, I have the entire animal just like it in my possession. Dead, of course.
You have one of these? Asked Captain Brooks.
Everyone turned to Lindstrom.
Well, yes. As I said, quite common in some circles.
What circles would that be, Dr. Lindstrom? Asked the captain.
Broderick stepped forward.
He's the one that chartered the John Jackson. He's the one that paid us to bring back the one he has. The one that made this and follow us back.
Lindstrom shook his head, noticing Broderick for the first time.
I have no idea what this man is talking about.
How did you acquire your specimen? How recently? Demanded Brooks.
Lindstrom waved his hands in the air.
That is not germane to the capture of the maniac.
He looked at Smith.
We have our culprit here. I've given you an extensive profile. If you execute the warrants, I'm sure you'll find the evidence you seek.
Brooks waved his hands over the quivering tentacle.
So this isn't relevant.
He looked down at the tooth-like claws. The idea that the owner of this thing, as these three witnesses claim, is waltzing around our sewers isn't relevant. His face was red as he looked at the pompous Lindstrom. Don't be a fool, replied Lindstrom. Their trickery will become apparent once we search Smith's premises. Brooks took the writ rescinding the search warrant and arrest from Cohen's hands. For the moment, there will be no search or arrest. I think we're best advised to pursue the allegation, crazy as it is, of the sea monster in the sewer. Fine. Be the fool, said Lindstrom, trying to act indifferent, but knowing his gambit had collapsed. Brooks continued. If we find the owner of this down there, I'll look forward to a full explanation from you as to why you're the owner of another part of a matching set. And I'd like to talk to some of the shipmates of this man over here, he said as he pointed to Broderick. We'll be sure to have the gentleman from MIT in the room clarify some things about what you have to say. Lindstrom waved a hand in the air. It seems as if my services are no longer of use to you while you chase this fantasy in the gutter. Good day. He turned and left the station. Broderick muttered a curse under his breath. Captain Brooks poked a finger in the Gatling gun at Smith's chest. If that's what I think it is, you better have a good answer as to how to stop this thing.
A notion, perhaps, said Smith as he winked at April.
This is a free audiobook presentation of The Chronological Man, The Monster in the Mist, by Andrew Main. Read by Justin Robert Young. If you would like to download the full ebook for only 99 cents, head on over to Amazon or Barnes & Noble's Nook Store or Apple's iBooks. If you are enjoying this presentation, head on over to the Amazon listing for The Chronological Man, The Monster in the Mist, and remember to leave a review. We appreciate it.